Hey, it's Mike Halford from the Halford and Bruff podcast. One, thanks for downloading. Two, thanks for listening. Three, why not leave a review while you listen to the podcast? And now, back to the show. Good morning, Vancouver. 6:02 on a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. It is Halford, it is Bruff, it is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Sportsnet 650 studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Nephew Dom, how are you now?
I am great.
Laddie?
Hello, hello.
Big first game for the Vancouver Canucks in the Bruce Boudreaux regime. We have a lot to get to, a lot to break down from last night's 4-0 win over the Los Angeles Kings. Before we do any of that, need to tell you that Halford and Bruff in the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are also brought to you by shopintercity.ca, shopintercity.ca. Steakhouse quality meals to your doorstep. Anywhere in Greater Vancouver, use promo code SPORTSNET20 at checkout for $20 off your order. Go.
What?
Talk about sports.
Talk about sports. That was my segue. Actually one of the more enjoyable days to be a Canucks fan, capped off with a 4-0 win over the Los Angeles Kings. That's how you're going to start. Today on the show, Justin Bourne is going to join us. We'll talk about the changes in Vancouver. Do you remember when we had Justin Bourne on and we asked him about Bruce Boudreaux and he kind of scoffed?
He did.
It was a blatant scoff.
He turned his nose up.
Turned his nose up at it.
Could feel it.
So we'll talk to Bourne about that because
Bruce Boudreaux is awesome.
He's an amazing coach. The Canucks are undefeated. They haven't even allowed a goal. Yeah. It's amazing. Tom Reed, who is the color man for the Minnesota Wild, we'll talk to Tom just about Boudreaux's time in Minnesota. What went right? Because it went more right than I expected it to when he originally went there, because I thought, I don't even know if he's got the team for that. I know he had the team in Washington. I know he had the team in Anaheim, but Minnesota, it was a largely successful time for him, except for the playoffs, which is kind of his calling card. We're not worried yet about his playoff performance.
No.
Just hoping for some regular season success. So we'll talk to Tom Reed about that. And at 8 o'clock, Thomas Drantz will join us. Drantz has been doing a lot of reporting on the Canucks situation. So we'll talk to him about what he thought about yesterday's press conference with Francesco Aquilini and the unexpected hero of the day, Stan Smeal, who came out of nowhere to wrestle that press conference away from the owner of the Vancouver Canucks, and I think made a lot of fans, maybe some new fans that don't even remember him, as an actual hockey player, and they're like, wait a minute, this guy's just been in the organization, and then all of a sudden he's the leader we need. In fact, our poll question today is, who had the most impressive day yesterday? And we came up with three really good candidates. Bruce Boudreaux, the new head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, who also charmed the media.
Yeah, we're suckers. We fell for it. Hook, line, and sinker.
Charmed the media, charmed the fans, seemed to charm the players, lots of jokes. I think brought the attitude that everyone kind of needed, that light attitude.
Yeah.
Maybe
brought
even
some, brought some levity to the situation.
Brought some levity to the situation. So was it Bruce Boudreaux, Thatcher Demko, who had the shutout yesterday?
I love that Demko's not getting
he's not getting
20% of the votes, tops.
Or was it Stan Smeal? 200 votes so far. Looks to be a two-horse race between Boudreaux and Smeal. Boudreaux's got 43% of the vote. Stan Smeal, 37%. So we'll talk to Thomas Drantz about everything that happened yesterday. But before we do that at 8 o'clock, let's get into what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it? You missed that?
What happened?
What happened? Also a presentation of shopintercity.ca. Get a hold of them now for all of your roast needs. An odd way of putting it. Roast needs. Just in time for the holidays.
I need a roast.
So, here's what we'll do. We'll span what happened in traditional form, going over what happened over the last 24 hours. More specifically, we'll focus on the game right now, and then at the 7 o'clock hour, we've got another open segment between guests. We can dive more into the Stan Smeal performance. I do want to say off the top that I agree with what you said and what you tweeted out. Unexpectedly compelling. I had no idea that that was coming. I knew about Smeal's passion and regard for the organization. I knew that as a Canucks lifer, all the cliches you want to throw at, he bleeds blue and green. We talked about that yesterday. All those things I knew. I just didn't realize that after all the dust had settled on this, that he was going to emerge as what seems like a very important figure moving forward.
Maybe. We'll see, right?
At least in the interim, which is, you know, going to be a very important time.
Yesterday, I expected that press conference when I heard it was going to be Aquilini and Stan Smeal up there. I expected almost every single question from the media to be directed directly to the owner, Francesco Aquilini. And maybe it was, but Stan Smeal ended up kind of fighting the press conference away from the owner. Mm-hmm. There were times when, and Aquilini had a good performance for Aquilini. He isn't a great public speaker. But there were times when I felt Stan Smeal wrestled it away. It was like, you know what? You're struggling a little bit with this answer. I have something to say, so I'm going to say it. And it was very impressive. And by the end of it, it was kind of like Rocky in Moscow. Everything changed. It was like, everyone's cheering for Rocky now? But all the questions started going towards Stan Smeal. Like, you said this earlier in the press conference, and I found that interesting.
So we'll work through all of this in the 7 o'clock hour. Also, what we could parse from that press conference in terms of what's going to come next for this team, because that's the big thing now. The on-ice and off-ice products, two totally separate things, two totally separate timelines. Because on-ice, we know what we can expect over the next little bit. That's Bruce Boudreau and Scott Walker behind the bench. Some pretty significant changes in a 4-0 win over the Los Angeles Kings last night. There's a lot of things to take away from here. The Thatcher Demko shutout, he was very good. There was obviously a more aggressive approach, especially on the forecheck from the team. That was good. It's weird. I don't normally want to start with the penalty kill in a 4-0 win, but I think you almost have to start there because it speaks to the mentality that Boudreau's trying to bring in.
Before we get into the details, you know what yesterday's game felt like?
What's that?
It felt like you've spent months in Vancouver, and it's been raining, and it's been miserable, and it's been dark out, and you get a little trip to Mexico to an all-inclusive resort.
Just a little short trip
to an all-inclusive resort, and everything is on a platter for you there. It's a change of scenery. Everything looks different, and, you know, like, oh, I want this. You got it. Mm-hmm. I want this. You got it. Everything is being catered to you. That was the game yesterday. Everything was going well. The only thing that didn't happen, and maybe this was a little bit of food poisoning at the salad bar or something in Mexico, was Petey missing his penalty shot.
Yeah.
If he would have scored on that, it would have been 5-star review on Travelocity for last night's game.
You sound like you want to go on a vacation.
I need a vacation so badly, Dom.
He's going to Edmonton.
I'm going to Edmonton on Friday.
Edmonton.
I was, you
in
know
the
where
dead
I was,
of winter.
Hey, you know where I was supposed to go? Mexico.
I noticed that analogy wasn't trying to compare the start of the Bruce Boudreau era to going to West Edmonton Mall. Which is good. It's a good analogy because everything went right. Like, you're talking about ordering.
It felt like a vacation from the Canucks we had come to know.
Yeah, you order from the waiter and you're like, could you send me one very tired opponent on the second of a back-to-back?
Exactly.
Like, here you go. You have the Los Angeles Kings. Now, I don't want to take anything away from my new favorite head coach, Bruce Boudreau, and this team, which is obviously going to turn it around now. But let's be a tad realistic. They got the new coach bounce. They got the new coach bump. There wasn't a ton that Boudreau could implement strategically.
You know what? I think that was part of the key. There wasn't a ton for him to implement.
Yeah. Keep it simple and play hard.
I think our theory that the Canucks were overthinking things too much might have been something because, and we'll talk to Drance about this. I think he was hinting at this in his column. They seem to be just playing with some freedom last night.
Right.
And just go out there and play aggressive, Don't worry if you make a mistake. Don't worry if you're not in the exact same spot on the ice that you're supposed to be. Just go out there and play hockey. And the word we had thrown around earlier about some of the Canucks' top players, especially the young players, is that they didn't seem to be playing on instinct.
Nope.
Now, this could just be a theory. There could be something else at play. We don't know what was said in the dressing room. But here's the thing. I don't think much was said in terms of tactics because there's no time. Like, they might have said, Scott Walker might have said, who's the new guy in charge of the PK, Bradshaw will take over the defense, and Scott Walker's got the PK.
Correct.
So that's the replacement for Nolan Baumgartner.
Yep.
He might have just said, guys, go out and be more aggressive. Like, chase the puck down. Don't worry too much if you get out of your structure. Mm-hmm. Chase the puck. And I noticed right off the hop, with their first penalty kill, they actually lost the faceoff, but still chased the puck down. Los Angeles bobbled it a little bit, and then they ended up getting it out. Other times, they might have just been like, we lost the faceoff. All right, get into position.
Yeah, right. Batten down the hatches.
Yeah.
Be passive, apparently. So, the overall message from Bruce Boudreau was, I asked the guys to play really hard, and that's what they did. They were aggressive, and they were on the puck. How did that really manifest itself last night? I would say, most notably, on the penalty kill. We have Boudreau audio on the penalty kill. We've got two clips here.
Oh,
yes?
No. I actually have behind-the-scenes audio. You were wondering what Bruce said before the game.
Yeah.
I have it for you, actually.
Let's hear it.
I have never seen a bunch of guys look so
poping
down when something bad happens.
I took the bait. That's on me.
That was pretty obvious.
I didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
But here we are. You know what, though? It's funny. That clip where the responses to it were like, he's coming down on his guys. But if your coach was saying that to you, it's in a way that is kind of endearing. Like, you know, Boudreau's mad and he's telling the guys to get through it. But he's also saying, here's how you get through it. Mm-hmm. Come on. He's got a very unique way of delivering his message. And I think that's what this group needed more than anything.
Apparently.
It's the old throw the arm around the guy.
Yeah.
Right? He said in his presser yesterday, I'm here telling these guys they're good players. They need to be told that they're good players.
Well, his conversation with Brock Besser, mm-hmm. where he was saying like, hey, man, like when you used to play us, when I was coaching Minnesota, you used to score all the time. And then he compared Ovechkin to Besser in that, like, I coached Ovechkin. That guy would shoot from anywhere.
Yeah,
he'd shoot 10, 12 times, and then one of them might go in.
Yep, and that
you
was
should
the message.
Do that.
That was the message. So you can see what's going on at that level in terms of just making everyone feel better about themselves, perhaps trying to instill some confidence, maybe trying to get some good vibes only in the room. There is going to be some strategic stuff, though. The penalty kill stuff was interesting because, as I mentioned, I think that was a manifestation of an overall philosophy. There wasn't a bunch of changes they could have made in the pregame skate or the morning
skate. Philosophy and the player deployment. Petey was out killing penalties.
So let's play back-to-back clips here from new head coach Bruce Boudreau about the changes on the penalty kill and maybe what it reflects in terms of an overall approach to the game.
Well, yeah. Well, evidently, the sitting back wasn't working. So, I mean, we changed it up. We gave other guys opportunities to do it, and I think they embraced it. Like, I mean, they sit there and they haven't done it before. And I told Brock, I said, you're next. And he said, holy crap. I mean, I'm going to kill a penalty. So, I mean, that's fun. I mean, when guys say they want to try it and give me a shot at it, and so you put the onus on them. Now, like, I mean, they go out and they do it, and they did what Scott wanted them to do, and so they're going to get more opportunities to do it. I mean, it's not always going to work like that, but it worked out good tonight. I think we caught them by surprise.
Kevin.
I think offensive guys that put pressure on, I mean, you look at the good teams, a lot of their best offensive players are also better killers, and they get more ice time and they feel more into it. So, I mean, I think it's a good thing as long as they're committed to doing the right things defensively when they're killing the penalty. I mean, if they're going out and looking for goals and cheating and swinging up at the top, then they're not going to do it. But if they do the right thing, when they do get the puck, they get opportunities, like Petey did, and to get the penalty shot. I mean, he was in perfect position and he was forcing. I mean, he didn't score the goal, but it was a great job defensively to get that opportunity.
Kevin from Coquitlam texted into the Dunbar Lumber text line. Boudreau mentioned that a player came up to him and asked to be on the PK. I wonder if that was Pedersen. Could have been. Drance wrote in The Athletic that Petey found out that he was on the PK just because his name was on the sheet to attend the penalty kill meeting. Mm-hmm. I think it might have been Horvat.
It was Horvat.
Yeah, I think it might have been Horvat.
Horvat led all Canucks forwards, all Canucks skaters, all Canucks forwards, sorry, in shorthanded time on ice last night.
I also think Horvat is upset that his reputation is he's not a very good penalty killer.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Well, it's not just his reputation. He hasn't been a very good penalty killer, and that's why Travis Green didn't have him out there except to win faceoffs, and then oftentimes he would be off.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Horvat takes that personally, and I think Horvat still thinks he can be a good penalty killer, and he was last night.
Yeah, there was a lot of really interesting things at play. Again, you got to contextualize everything. Bruce Boudreau acknowledged himself that there was a – he actually said it, like players are looking to impress the new head coach. So there's going to be that first game bounce or whatever. But the really interesting thing was that he's – clearly brought in because his philosophy lends itself to let's play with more freedom, let's play aggressively, and then whatever mistakes that we make from being aggressive, we will clean those up, as opposed to let's not play passive and try and eliminate those mistakes before they happen. Does that make sense? That's kind of where I'm – that was, I think, the biggest difference in approaches is when you play passive and you're just out there maybe not to screw up or maybe to make it as low event as possible.
Oh, just sitting there and going, like, I have to be in this spot. This is the lane that I'm shutting down.
And you can accomplish that. And you can make it a very dull, low event, non-flowing game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Boudreau said last night, we made a bunch of mistakes doing the things that we were trying to do.
Yeah.
But we feel like we can go back and correct those.
Well, and that's why Thatcher Demko's performance was so important. Because he did make some big saves. And if he didn't make those big saves, if the Canucks had a bad goaltending performance last night, it's a very different feeling about the entire game. The Canucks have now won 3 of 4. House of positivity.
Yeah.
They've got 4 games left on this 6-game homestand. Started out very badly with the 4-1 loss to Pittsburgh that caused the house cleaning, or that led to the house cleaning. I don't want to say it caused it.
Mm-hmm.
The final straw before the house cleaning. They just beat the Los Angeles Kings 4-0. The Boston Bruins and Brad Marchand, who's off his suspension now, visit on Wednesday. Just throwing it out there, if you're going to the game, it's a 6 o'clock start. Wednesday, 6 o'clock start. So make sure you're there on time.
It's a big one.
I was at the – was it the Colorado game? It was a Wednesday. I think it was a couple weeks ago. And it was a 6 o'clock start. And I think a few people forgot that attended that game.
The 4-2 loss to Colorado. That was another national game.
Yes. And that was on a Wednesday. So tomorrow's game, if you're going, 6 o'clock start. 3 remaining games after that on the homestand. Friday against Winnipeg. And then Carolina and Columbus.
So I know we're going to get into the Stan Smeal, Francesco Aquilini presser in the 7 o'clock hour and play some Steamer's greatest hits. Had a lot of really good quotes from that one, but I was really trying to see through a lot of that and figure out exactly what the plan is here. What's the idea behind this? And there was only a couple of nuggets that got slipped out, but one of them was Smeal essentially saying, we got 3 to 4 weeks before we are done our analyzation period as this sort of 5-man management group. And I think the larger story there was you got 3 to 4 weeks to see what this team really is in a functional environment.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key thing. I don't think that they had made their analysis of the core guys and the guys that might be moved out or might not under what had been going on previously. Like, everything got so bad and so ugly and so toxic between Green and Benning and the group and the room and last season, everything.
And the fans and the media.
And the finger pointing and what have you and the banners. But
and even God himself.
God was not happy. You could tell. You could tell. However... now I think I even kind of drew it out to a, there's going to be 15 games over the next 30 days in which I think the goal is win as many hockey games as you can, get as many good vibes as you can, fall in love with Boudreau as much as you can, and see what you really are. This is your chance to prove what we are, again, in a healthy, productive environment. And that's an interesting thing to task a coach with, because usually guys come in and there's certain expectations. The funny thing now is 25 games into a season where expectations were really high, Bruce Boudreau's got to be laughing, because there's not really any expectations. He's carte blanche. He's in there to make guys feel good about themselves, try and change the style of play to just be more aggressive, and then really put the onus on the players. Like, this is on you guys now. Like, there's no more excuses. There's no more waiting for the other shoe to drop. All the decisions have been made. I'm your coach. You know what the management group looks like. You've got this next stretch to try and do that.
You know what I like about emphasizing the word aggressive is that it's not just applicable to the offense. It is applicable to the offense, and that's why Bruce Boudreau is known as an offensive-friendly coach. But the Canucks were excellent defensively last night. They did not surrender many high-danger chances against at 5-on-5. You can be aggressive defensively. In fact, you need to be aggressive defensively, and that's the difference between standing there and blocking a shot and actually checking someone. Right? And Daryl Sutter talks about this, the head coach in Calgary now, who's had quite a bit of success. Mm-hmm. He says, you don't just stand there, you check them and you go through them. That's how you get the puck. And Boudreau emphasized this yesterday, because I think sometimes he might bristle at his, not brain doesn't bristle, but maybe he's just like, hey, you guys think I'm just like a pond hockey coach?
Yeah, right.
I'm not. First of all, he's talking about all the practices and lessons that he's having to teach his players. If he was a pond hockey coach, that's not the case. He's talking about looking forward to practice. But he also said, like, you can be both. You can be a good offensive team and a good defensive team. And it starts with just taking care of your own end.
Yeah.
And checking and being aggressive. And the one thing I'm really glad he said was managing the puck.
Now,
because you better manage the puck, and puck management has been a big time issue for the Canucks.
Right. Now, the issue here and the thing is going to be, it looked great for one night.
Yep.
And, you know, playing aggressive and being aggressive worked great, but they still, I mean, there was a lot of high quality chances that LA got. Demko was unreal. It might go back to, hey, I'm not joking, some of the previous examples of this Canucks team where it was, they were giving up a lot of chances and Demko was their best player more often than not. When they go up against the superior opponent and are aggressive and are doing the things that Boudreau wants them to do, I would say that if they're making the same amount of mistakes or given the personnel that they have, they're going to give up even more chances. That's just the reality of it.
The perfection line that Boston has.
So that's a real test on Wednesday night.
It's going to be a real test.
You know, you're going to go and you're going to try and match.
That's what Burrows did against Marchand in the corner. He played him too close, and then Marchand went, all right, I'm just going to dance around you. Bye.
Well, exactly. And then if you're passive in that situation, you're 5 feet off Marchand, and you're like, you're not getting past me, but you're also going to have a lot more room to operate in that space. So that's going to be interesting to watch. But from a game one, first takeaways, I really couldn't have gone any better for Bruce Boudreau and the Vancouver Canucks. We got to get to break. On the other side, Justin Bourne is going to join us. We can talk coaching with Bourne, what he's seen, what he saw last night from the Vancouver Canucks in their 4-0 win over the Los Angeles Kings. 8 o'clock, Thomas Drantz is going to join us. 7 o'clock hour, we'll dive right back into the Canucks stuff and talk more about the performance that Stan Smeal put on yesterday at that press conference, in which he instilled a lot of heart and emotion and maybe confidence in this team moving forward. There's a lot more to get to, so don't go anywhere. It's the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. The Halford and Brough in the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are also brought to you by shopintercity.ca, shopintercity.ca. Steakhouse quality meals delivered to your doorstep anywhere in Greater Vancouver. Use promo code SPORTSNET20 at checkout for $20 off your next order. To the phone lines we go. Our good buddy, Sportsnet NHL analyst Justin Bourne here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Bourne?
Oh, not too much here. Sounds like a few things there, though.
A couple minor details and developments over the last couple of days. Nothing major. Bruce Boudreau's in. Bruce Boudreau's the best head coach ever, by the way. I don't know if you're aware of this or not. You scoffed, Bourne. Scoffed when we brought up the idea of the hire. And then I see, after doing that, you went ahead and bet on the new coach bump anyway.
Why are you such a hypocrite?
Why are you a hypocrite, Bourne?
I don't see anything that I've done here that's hypocritical. I think there you can bet on a one-game bump and not believe in a multi-year change. But hey, there's exciting things here. Things are different now, and that's good.
They did get the one. I mean, we acknowledge the fact that they got the bump. Everything really went according to the plan of bringing in a new guy. You get a tired opponent on the second of a back-to-back. You get everyone trying to impress the new coach. Everyone showed up wearing bow ties. And everyone went out there and, you know, did what the coach wanted to do, which was to be aggressive. You've probably seen this before, though, Bourne, in your time covering all different levels of hockey. There's game two, and then there's game three. So maybe we should temper our enthusiasm just a little bit. However, still some good signs last night.
Yeah, you know, you guys know, I'm the last guy who still thinks the Canucks aren't terrible. So
right,
you know,
right.
This is good. This is good for me that I'm hoping it's sort of a renewed chance to prove what, you know, to prove the talent level of the group there. But yeah, you know, the one thing that I've always believed when you watch an NHL team go in the wrong direction over and over, even if you don't change the coaches, like why you don't see teams do more drastic, take more drastic changes, like, you know, change your systems up entirely, change the lines up entirely, call up a bunch of American League guys. You know, we see so many bad teams just do this death march, but you know, for the Canucks, I don't know if they're going to be that much different, but at least it's something different. They, you know, Green was a grind it out, chip it in, get after guys type of coach. Boudreaux is a lot more of a let your talented guys be your talented guys and figure it out from there. You know, one of the best examples is Mike Green, who was basically an AHL player with Washington when he came up, and Boudreaux basically said, you know, have at her, kid. We're not going to bench if you make a mistake. And we know how that panned out for Green in Washington. So it seems to be a little bit of what the Canucks needed.
So you spent time coaching in the American League, and I imagine where this would be even more profound and important. But can you speak about the importance of being the coach that throws an arm around a guy and is the guy that's going to tell you that you're a good player? Because one of Boudreaux's remarks from his introductory presser yesterday was, I'm going around telling all these guys that they're good players and they need to know that they're good players. And it was no question that to a certain degree, the club was beaten down, especially at the end of the Travis Green era. So I imagine that you've seen it firsthand where sometimes it's not about the X's and O's stuff. It's just reminding guys that they can play and encouraging them to play.
Yeah, you know, I really don't believe that there's one way to coach a hockey team, you know, and I'm sure you guys would agree with that. Like, it totally depends on your personnel and what you're trying to get out of them. You know, the Travis Greenway, and I've mentioned it on this show a few times, that, you know, seeing him in Utica with under-talented teams, his way worked really well because you kind of convince everyone that no one is bigger than the team and you're all going to play the same way and everyone's on the same, you know, level. Not really the case at the NHL level, particularly when you have a team with guys like Pettersson, Hughes, and, you know, Besser, and a lot of those talents that are in Vancouver. So I like the idea that he's coming in and saying, you know, here's what I believe. I believe you're good, and I believe that good players are going to be what powers this team. And if they are going to have any sort of resurgence, it's going to be the back on Pettersson getting better and that making his line mates better and everyone feeling good about themselves and those guys scoring enough to mitigate some of the other problems that the team has.
Is there something to be said to the players that I just want you to go out and play aggressive, don't worry about making mistakes?
I mean, it's the best. It's, you know, the absolute best thing as a player. You're totally green-lit to worry about the offensive side of things. And I also think that it puts a level of personal responsibility on the player to actually care about defense without being told to do it. It's like, you know, sometimes when you're a kid and having your mom tell you to clean up your room, it was not that effective. But if you ever got the idea that yourself, damned if you wouldn't clean the hell out of it. Maybe that was just me, but that little bit of like, I made this decision for me because I want to sometimes can go a long way with guys. And hopefully that works in Vancouver.
Yeah. You're looking around your room. You're like, this place is a mess. Somebody should clean this up. Like, I guess it's on me. Yeah. It just seemed to be, yesterday, I compared yesterday to you're in Vancouver for months and months, and it's raining and it's dark, and then you get a trip to an all-inclusive in Mexico, and everything is just like on a platter for you. Everything is going well. Your needs are catered to. But I guess the end part of that story is you always have to come back from Mexico.
Yeah.
So how long does it last? I guess that's the question going forward for the Canucks.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, your relationship is so good on that trip, and you're like, God, my marriage is salvageable. Then you get in a fight at baggage claim on the way home. And you're like, oh, that was useless. That saved nothing. I don't know. That's a good question. First off, though, to focus on the all-inclusive, that presser with Bruce Boudreau was delightful, was it not?
Yep.
I mean, the man being like, yeah, wow, these guys are fast. Did anyone else know this? Like, holy smokes. Have you guys seen the talent? Was like such a guy who won a make-a-wish to become the coach. And was like, I had no idea these guys were so good. Also saying that he almost died out there. Really, just a delightful presser, all told.
When he said his skates hadn't been sharpened?
Yeah!
it does go to show, I think that was a sign that this might have been like kind of like a last-minute decision by the Canucks in that get a coach in, they fly him in, he's like, my skates are so dull, I have not been on the ice for years.
I've been using these to cut cold cuts, you know? It is really funny. We had Gord Stellick on our show yesterday who mentioned that, you know, some other coaches may have wanted longer term, i.e. Claude Julien, and more money. And so Boudreau is kind of like this perfect fit for on both sides. He gets to get back in and they get someone for a little bit who's at least going to be sunnier to be around. And in that regard, maybe he can be like Charlie Montoyo for the Jays. Like, let's just keep a good disposition around while we're turning the franchise around and then we'll make the decisions later. But yes, I do think that there is a snowball effect that can happen. And if Boudreau's positivity on this all-inclusive is so contagious and gets people feeling good about themselves, that there can be some lasting effects, for the rest of the team throughout the season. So I don't know. If they go hot enough in the early going, it could be lasting for the year.
We're speaking to Justin Bourne, Sportsnet NHL analyst here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. I know this is the home of the Canucks, and I know that the Canucks have had profound changes and a win and a new coach and a new general management group, but I got to spend 5 minutes talking about the Leafs because we have spent zero time over the last 48 hours delving into what's going on. So I watched a game on Saturday night against Minnesota, which was very chippy and very physical, and then they managed to outdo that in an exceptionally nasty game against the Jets, in which all these suspensions and hearings are coming from. It's gotten to the point now where you and Kipper are talking about Austin Matthews no longer having to take the high road and retaliate for himself. What's going on? What are we missing here? Because, again, we've been busy, we haven't paid attention, but apparently there's some sort of weird crisis going on with the Leafs and their toughness again.
Well, it's not really a toughness crisis so much as, like, the Leafs had pushback in a hockey match. And everyone was like, wait, that was cool. You know, that was like a camaraderie building, fun thing for the fan base. Fan base here has been dying. You know, they love Darcy Tucker and Wendell Clark, dying for someone to punch someone in the face. So seeing, Spez obviously doing his thing, but Simmons and Clifford and some of the low-line guys doing their thing has been really cool. But, like, again, it's just Austin Matthews got, someone grabbed him by the collar and tossed him around like a child. And when he got up, he wasn't angry. He skated backwards and waited for his next shift. And so Kipper and I were just making the point yesterday that, like, I don't know, in my own playing career, I was a softer player, but as I got older, I was like, okay, you can't just cross check me in the neck and have me do nothing. Like, I deserve better treatment than that. Both of us just want to see from Matthews, a level of the all-time greats of the NHL have found that competitive edge where it's like Crosby will spear you in the groin and Ovechkin will punch you in the mush if he has to. And Connor McDavid might even run you from behind. Matthews is unbelievable. It's not being critical of his game to say it would just be nice to see him defend himself and the team would be happy to kill any penalties that came from Austin Matthews sticking up for himself out there, which would be great.
Right. I guess what you're alluding to there is, I mean, this is a conversation that I think a lot of different fans have had in a lot of different markets. It's, do you look to the bench or to the sidelines? In this case, it would be Clifford and Simmons in Toronto. There'd be guys in every market like that. Or do you take care of business yourself? It's actually a great philosophical debate because there is something to be said for...
Use your stick.
Yeah.
When you're a talented player like Matthews, That's what it's for. You just use your stick. You don't have to fight.
You know what? It's very Sedin related for Vancouver. Like, that was pretty, I think of the Marchand ragdoll. It's like,
Daniel should have sticked him.
Punch it, cross check him right in the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
We'll kill that penalty for you every time.
We're speaking to Justin Bourne from Sportsnet here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Bourne, thanks a lot for doing this today, bud. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the week. Have a good one. We'll do this again next Tuesday.
Yeah, thanks. I always love going out on advocating people getting cross-checked in the mouth. It's great, great look for
it. It's what we do here at the Halford and Brough Show. Thanks, buddy.
You're going to be part of a lawsuit one day.
Yeah, I know.
See you, buddy.
Right, thanks, guys.
Justin Bourne here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
We should talk about the presser with Stan Smeal and Francesco Aquilini.
Yep.
Now, we've kind of mentioned it, but Stan Smeal stole the show. And in typical social media fashion, everyone was kind of like making conclusions based on a solid 20-minute press conference.
Right.
Like, make him the president.
Right. We found our way, Canucks fans, and it is going to be led by Stan Smeal. And I, again, it's hard. It's almost like the bubble experience, how I classified it. It's like, don't make too much of it, mm-hmm. but don't dismiss it
but
either.
But don't dismiss it either.
Yeah. So in the case of what Smeal went out there and did, I think the best thing he could have done was speak honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And he was speaking honestly because I think a lot of the things that he said, this is my only team, this is my team, I bleed the team colors, I think those are all true.
You know what I think happened? I think a lot of Canucks fans saw themselves in Stan Smeal. And they saw a guy who, unlike themselves, had access to the powers that be in that organization.
Mm-hmm.
And Stan Smeal said that after the game on Saturday against Pittsburgh, he kind of sat there and he reflected, and then he thought, I got to say something.
Right.
I've got to do something here. I do have access to the powers that be in this hockey club, and I'm going to go say something. He said stuff to the players, too. He said stuff to the players. He had a pregame speech to the players where he essentially told them, hey, guys, you got to be a little tougher to play against. And I think if you know Stan Smeal's career, starting from when he was in junior all the way up through the NHL, he played all his games for the Vancouver Canucks. And in the NHL, he racked up over 1,500 penalty minutes. That guy was tough. He was not a big guy, but he was tough and willing to fight anyone. I remember him fighting Dave Semenko once. And if you go and find that YouTube clip, someone sent it to me yesterday, I think, on Twitter. And I was like, I remember that.
Yeah.
And Steamer looks like a little boy fighting a giant, but he was in there doing it. And I think Stan Smeal has been sitting there, like a lot of Canucks fans, and, you know, I hate this, but he's been steaming. Watching.
I see what you did there.
Really?
Nice.
If his nickname wasn't Steamer, it would have been fine. But he's been sitting there, and he's just been like, I cannot believe this is the team.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, and you know, he was asked about the jersey going on the ice.
We got the audio. We should play it because that to me was interesting because it was the argument that a lot of people were making against throwing the jersey. Was that jersey means something?
I kind of feel like Smeal was sitting there going, I was thinking of throwing my jersey. Like,
right.
He really didn't push back on the fans so much, did he? He pushed back on the organization. He said, okay, well, let's play the audio.
Yep.
And then we'll let the listeners decide.
The end of that game was difficult. And I think just hearing the fans. So the end of that game was very difficult to watch. And that's when I felt I have to get involved here a lot more. And express my views maybe a little stronger. But like I said, at the end of the day, we're all responsible, from the players to the management, to the coaches, to the ownership, and we've got to make it better. I think we've taken a step back in the direction we want to go, and we got to put that game plan together and follow through on it, John.
It's interesting to hear him say it because, you know, Drantz wrote this up in The Athletic yesterday, and he said, Stan Smeal at times yesterday got real. Real was italicized because that's honestly what it was. Is there was a prepared statement, sure, but when he started fielding questions, it got down to this team isn't even remotely close to where we want it to be at. It's been a disappointment. And you bring up a good point. When he's talking about the fans throwing the jersey on the ice, he's not condemning the fans. He's saying it was hard to watch, that the ticket buying public had become so disenchanted with what they were seeing mm-hmm. that they went there. Wasn't saying, admonishing him. Like Cheech kind of admonished, not yes. kind of, he totally did on the broadcast. That's an admonishment of fan behavior. Smeal didn't go there. I don't know whether
admonished it was the organization, and rightly so.
Because it wasn't good enough. And that's something that I don't know why it took this long and this far for that to happen, but sometimes you need crisis points to have a really profound change in an organization.
So I'll be curious to see, number one, if the Canucks as an organization can take that emotion that we saw and that, you know, honest anger and honest frustration, not just because this is my job and I'm not doing my job very well, a guy that it kind of transcends his job. It goes above his responsibilities to more like, this means something to yep. me. This is an organization that means something to me. And that's why I think it struck Canucks fans, because this team, we cheer for this team. God knows why, right? But it does mean something to us. Should it? Not really. I mean, it's just a hockey team, but it does, right? It's something that we have as fans, as part of our identity. And that's what Stan Smeal has. So it'll be interesting to see if they're able to take this honest mm-hmm. anger and honest frustration and use it as momentum
yep.
to make the changes going forward and to change the culture. Because I saw that Stan Smeal was on the People Show as well, and I have not heard this clip, but I saw it summarized for me mm-hmm. and it said something along the lines of, we lost our values.
As a group, you never wanted to have it slip away. Mm-hmm. And it has. And, it got to the point for me watching the last little while, not just the last couple of weeks, but the months of the identity of this team. And for me, you need an identity. You need a sense of direction so the players can get in a role that they're comfortable with and for me, at the end of the day, the biggest thing of having that identity and what it's like to be a Canuck is just be hard to play against. And I, myself personally, didn't see that. And that has to change.
What an indictment of so many things that have been done for this Canucks organization. So much money has been spent on guys that are culture guys, good in the room, and yet through it all, still lost their identity.
Well, I mean,
still lost their values. Hundreds of millions of dollars
is that
spent on keeping the culture.
That underscores the power of losing. Is you can bring in the most high character guys on the planet, but it ain't going to make a lick of difference if you're not winning hockey games. It's a results oriented business. And that was, for me, the biggest takeaway from the entire thing was that clip there about how forthright and honest Smeal was about the problems that existed with this team. The finger-pointing quote was the one that really got me, because usually you don't delve that deep into specifics about what's gone wrong. And I know he was talking in generalities, but it didn't take much to read between the lines to know that he was talking about what was happening in that room. This is Stan Smeal on the finger-pointing that was going on as the Canucks continued to lose and lose and lose.
This isn't about finger-pointing at this point in time. And what I mean about that, players can't be pointing at the management, and management can't be pointing at the coaches or the ownership pointing at the players. The only people that are going to fix this is us. And if you have that, it's not going to get any better. And the players have to take responsibility. We have to take responsibility. And it has to change now. And if there's anyone in this organization at this point in time that doesn't want to do that, then come and see me, and we'll hopefully make it better for you somewhere else, because we don't want anyone in our organization with those sort of thoughts.
How welcome that message was to the fan base. Mm-hmm. The fan base needed to hear it. And this is why it's important to have a communicator. This is why it's important
that's to have someone speak for the team that's articulate and forceful. It's just the energy that the fan base gets from that, just from a marketing perspective, to have someone like, and I know a lot of people like roll their eyes when media guys like you and I say they need a good communicator for the fans because they're thinking, oh, they're just, you know, they're just thinking about themselves.
They just want their quotes for their newspaper stories.
Not, absolutely not. You need leadership that can communicate what's expected. And I don't know if anything's more clear than Stan Smeal saying, you're either with us or we'll find you somewhere else to be. You're either a part of this organization that is committed to this organization and doing the things we're going to do, or you're not. Now, they can't just be words.
I was just going
to
say
because
that.
There is so much to do, so much left to do.
Right.
It's easy to make a speech. You got to have the follow-up.
Well, that's for all the people texting in saying, my, how you guys' tone has changed in 24 hours. I want to put in the disclaimer. Yesterday was a nice moment, but it ain't going to mean a lick if nothing changes. One win isn't going to fix everything. A new coach isn't going to fix everything. Smeal alluded to...
Stan Smeal is going to fix everything, though.
Smeal alluded to major, large-scale issues in terms of approach and accountability and identity, things that don't get fixed with a 20-minute press conference and bringing in a new head coach 25 games into a season. There's a lot that needs to get fixed and needs to get addressed. So we're going to get into that on the other side. 7 o'clock hour. What do the next 3 to 4 weeks look like? From a managerial level, what's the next step? There was a lot of information from Aquilini and Smeal yesterday about who's going to be coming in, what role they might be coming in to serve, and what the long-term outlook is for this management group, which, again, is currently comprised of 5 different individuals. There's a lot to get into on the other side. Before we get into all of it, Jason's going to tell you about ZLC Financial.
The official financial sponsor of Halford & Brough is ZLC Financial. It's your one-stop solution for all your financial and retirement needs in Vancouver. To learn more, visit zlc.net. And remember, advice is only as good as the person you ask.